Good afternoon, film lovers. Great, great start. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. The show is available as a podcast. We'll edit. And it's also available on iTunes, if you go that way. We also have a blog, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Coming in just in the nick of time. Well, not really. if Aaron Eckhart and Maggie Gyllenhaal, they would be dead. Anyway, Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
Day after Thanksgiving. Good to have you here.
Yep, good to be
you
here.
You were out late. You were out late, weren't you?
You know what I was.
You did Black Friday. You did everything, which I think.
Oh, did you see that? Did you see the post? My reindeer pig.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Was it worth knocking somebody over for that?
Yes, and we'll see. It wasn't just that. We also got a Christmas tree.
I see.
Christmas tree and a couple other things. And
how late were you out shopping?
Oh, jeez. We got to the store about a quarter after midnight, thinking, oh, we're just gonna stroll right on in.
Boy, you're so naive.
Nope. So the line wrapped like halfway around the back of the store to get in. They had barricades up and set a timer, and we were in from the time we stood in line to hitting the door. It was 12 minutes 51 seconds.
I see. Yep. So it was worth it.
It was cool. Never done it.
Never will again?
No, I think so.
You're young. You bounce back. Not us. Back. Takes a while. Ladies and gentlemen, I love doing the show right after the holidays. Obviously with the day after Thanksgiving, because there's lots going on. And of course Christmas will be coming up soon. But we have a very special treat, because I've tried to get this man on the show for a long time. I mean, to do a phoner is one thing, but it's much better to have him in studio live. I've had Academy Award winning actors and prolific filmmakers easier to get on than this gentleman, but
chefs.
I'm glad he is here. What? Yeah, and chefs. Yeah, I'm giving Robert Irvine some time off from the film show. But longtime film critic for the Lafayette Journal and Courier and fellow member of the IFJA, the personification of doughy white guys with glasses, Bob Bloom is hanging out with us. Hi, Bob.
Hello, hello.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
Now here's the thing. I know these
young guys. They do all these things.
With your Black Friday
and Black Fridays.
Can you imagine us sitting on the stoop right now, going, "Look at those crazy kids out there shopping at midnight."
Mm-hmm. God, you just buy it online. It's just the same price, and you avoid all the people.
Yeah, take a break from the porn and do some shopping online. So, hi Bianca, hey, fair sweet Bianca, if you're listening online, and hi to Bob's family. So, no, the fact that you're in town, you're on the way back.
On the way back to Lafayette. We left Bloomington. We were in Bloomington for Thanksgiving with my son, daughter-in-law, her family, and our two lovely grandsons.
Who are also listening on WFYI.org, and we'll get to them in a little bit because you had a cinematic experience with them, but you stopped by, and we really, really appreciate this.
Pleasure. I've always wanted to do it, but, you know, working at a small-town newspaper.
An hour away.
And you don't do movies 24/7. You know, it's, if I can get out for a screening, I get out, and if not, I'm chained to the copy desk
exactly.
for 40 hours
so,
a week.
So here we are. It's going to be fun. I don't think, you know what, Kobe? This show is going to be so chock full of film knowledge and goodness. I don't think we're even going to run trailers today.
Cool.
That's how good we are. We might have to take a break, but you know, we'll get there. Yeah. So, all right. So we got six films opening in Indianapolis, which means in Lafayette and Richmond they'll come eventually. But
yes.
No, there's a few of these.
Hugo did not open in Lafayette, which really
nor Richmond.
I don't want to use any curse words.
It's
but
sad.
It was sad. It was more than sad. It was angered. I was angered.
Yeah, that's pretty. But we'll mention opening in theaters in Indianapolis this week. The Skin I Live In, the latest collaboration between El Moldovar. I love that he's now gone to one name, and Antonio Banderas. And you wish all plastic surgeons look like Antonio Banderas, men and women. My Week with Marilyn, which has Michelle Williams as Marilyn Monroe, Kenneth Branagh as Laurence Olivier. And we also have Arthur Christmas from the people that brought us Wallace and Gromit, Flushed Away, and those are there. And but we're going to start with something that we both got to watch together. Well, separately, but we both saw this film, and Bob's going to take the helm on a couple other pictures. But yes, the long-awaited return, although I would say don't call it a comeback. Cause,
they've been here for years?
Yeah, they've never really gone away, but they got a jolt thanks to actor and writer and executive producer Jason Segel, the Muppets.
Yes, a labor of love.
Big time.
Yes, Jason Segel, I think, loves the Muppets.
It's very obvious, and of course you can listen to his interview on Fresh Air on WFYI.org or Fresh Air at NPR.org. And you kind of watch this and think, if everybody had this much passion and love for the projects that they work on, and some do, we know that, but us being, you know, brittle old critics, it was just, Segel, as when we found out he was going to make this film, he does kind of have Muppet-like tendencies about him.
Yeah, and I was, you know, and they had the scene with him, I don't want to give too much away, there's a scene with him imagining himself as a Muppet. It wasn't a big leap.
No, not
it's
at all.
It's a rather just little step.
Although, even though he looks like a Muppet, we saw way too much Muppet in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, so
yes.
we're not gonna talk about that. Yes, Kobe?
I saw that.
You saw Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You know what scene I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's move on. So, in this one, Jason Segel is the brother of
Walter,
who's also a Muppet. We won't talk about this parental gene pool.
No, and that was, to me, you know, that was one of the charms of the movie. It threw it out there at the beginning. Hi,
right off the bat.
I'm Walter, and this is my brother, Gary.
Yep.
You know, and, hey, wait, Gary's not a Muppet. And, hey, Walter, do you know you're a Muppet? You know, you don't even ask, you just accept it. The suspense of... Suspension of disbelief is right at the opening scene.
And more realistic gene pool than, say, John Voight plus Helen Mirren equals Nicolas Cage.
That's true, yes.
Odd family. But anyway, so this one, yes. And Walter loves the Muppets. He wants to visit Muppet Studios. And it's dilapidated and old. And it's going to be sold to a rich oil baron played by Academy Award winner Chris Cooper. One of our favorites. And we don't want to give away a whole lot. And there's something we don't want to give away, but there's something involving Chris Cooper in this that is probably one of the more unexpected things to come out in movies this year.
Oh, yeah.
So it just adds to the – if you go to IMDb, you don't have to do that right now, Kelby, but if you check out Chris Cooper's resume, of course, he won the Oscar for Adaptation,
right.
And he's in Lone Star. He's one of John Sayles' regular players.
Yes.
And has done a lot of things. And he's really good. I mean, this is like Charles Durning in the Muppet movie, good, as the bad guy.
Right. Yes.
But there's just something about it, which we really hope you go see it, because...
It's worth the movie, the price of admission, just for this one scene with Chris Cooper.
And it just adds to the awesomeness of his career. So,
yes.
Anyway, and there's also, of course, Academy Award nominee Amy Adams as the girlfriend, capital G. And, everybody gets in on the act. They're singing and dancing, and yes, all of the Muppets, minus Jim Henson because he's dead, minus Frank Oz because he has a black heart, all providing voices and getting the band back together.
Yeah, sort of like kids version of the Blues Brothers. Let's get the band back together.
with just as many reunion shots.
Right.
But yeah, you get all the characters. And what is really wonderful about the film is obviously Jason Segel not only loves the Muppets, he and his co-writer and the director, they know the show.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of homages to the old Muppet show, which I know you can check those out online. But everything from the very subtle to the very over the top as far as the Muppet style humor that they've had, and they capture it really well.
Yeah, there's and I don't remember the Muppets, the big guy who keeps running after them. Oh
yes.
No, not again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's also homages to some other Muppet films that have happened in the past.
Yes, and there's also like homages, little tweaks to filmmaking, like, how did you get here so fast? We traveled by map.
We traveled by map. We had a montage.
Yes.
We'll get through it. And I'm going to pull up my black socks now. And this is, oh, by the way, I guess if the sharpshooter's out on the roof across the street, remind us, it's Disney's The Muppets.
Yes,
so,
unfortunately.
Now because I was worried when I saw the trailer for this, and of course that logo, that label as Disney's The Muppets, was how much of their fingers were going to get into the Muppet pie, so to speak. The only big finger that I have issues with is I don't care what movie you are. You can't make We Built This City by Starship cool. I'm sorry. Even if you have Muppets dancing to it, not cool. Now, there is AC/DC music, and there's, I think, some Aerosmith, because you have to have rock music for kids and adults. That's
yes.
pandering. So, but if that's the biggest complaint I have with a movie, so be it.
I didn't mind it. I just enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised because I was expecting, you know, it's
far
Disney.
Worse.
Well, no, it wasn't, not even far worse. I was just expecting with Disney, gee, is Ariel going to show up? You know, what kind of crossover
promotion
are they going to do? How is Disney going to make a buck off of this any other way beside releasing the movie?
Right.
And, you know, whatever they're going to do with the merchandising. But
which they will.
Yeah. But, you know, I was thinking, how are they going to really, you know, have the Muppets go to Disney, you know, Disneyland or Disney
sure.
World or something. But they sort of kept out of the
they
way.
They kept their distance, which is something to be
yes.
said about that. So we have to give them props because they kept their fingers, for the most part, out of the Muppets, and they kept their fingers out of Winnie the Pooh earlier this year. So there's some credit. Although I will also mention that there is a short beforehand, and it's yet another Toy Story short,
what?
Which is cute.
Yes.
Yes.
Another Toy Story cartoon. I guess it's the thing that Disney, Pixar is going to be doing now. It's a way to make... keep the characters alive in,
and
you know, the minds of the filmgoers in case down the road they decide to do Toy Story 4, Old Man Woody and Old Man
Buzz
to the wherever nursing home and beyond.
You're not going to sound like Walter Brennan.
No, I can't.
But I will say it is a very clever short, albeit a sequel to a sequel to you know, a franchise.
Right.
But there is something involving the voice of Jane Lynch, which is always a welcome I should say. So overall, yeah, go check this out. It's in theaters. You saw it for the second time.
Yes, I
wow.
Yes, I took
Well, and you
took my grandsons to the movie. It's the second movie I've actually taken my oldest grandson, who's 6. First movie was Cars 2. He survived that.
We all did.
Luckily, he is not as critically thinking as I am. He enjoyed it. He thought it was colorful. He thought the cars were funny. But took him and his 4-year-old brother to the Muppets today. He's a chip off the old block. He sat there basically just enthralled. The 4-year-old halfway through said he wanted me to go get him more popcorn. And is it over yet? But he was a good little champ. He sat through the whole thing and then get up, want to run to the lobby. He just sat there, kept jumping up and down, but he made it through.
That's good. Emma was 4 when at her first film in the theater.
Yes, so but you shouldn't have taken her to Reservoir Dogs.
I did not take her to Reservoir Dogs. I did not. It was Racing Stripes, which actually Reservoir Dogs is a better film than Racing Stripes. She calls it the zebra movie. But it's one of those, it was not the primary film I reviewed that week. And I you know, going in, there's a possibility you might have to go away.
Right.
So, because I'm not the parent that's going to let the child squirm and make noises through the whole damn feature. Hint, hint. So was that how many films have you seen twice in theaters? Because I've only done Winnie the Pooh twice in theaters.
This year.
Yeah, the most recent one.
This year I haven't seen that many twice. Usually, if my lovely Carol wants to see a movie that I've given very good review to, I will go back and, you know,
sure,
see it again and take her to. But, you know, I can't really remember if there's any movies I've seen twice this year, be quite honest.
Okay.
My mind sort of goes blank at, you know, gee, did I see this once or twice? I know there's...
Okay.
So I think this may be the first double dip of the year.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
I saw Cedar Rapids twice.
In theater?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're helping the film industry out with your dollars.
You know it. See, this is what I've been talking about all year long.
Because 2011 has been billed as?
The Kobe Saves Hollywood tour.
Yeah, so that's good. You got another month to go.
I know.
This is the big one. This is all the grown-up movies.
Yes. I want to see Week with Marilyn.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
And we want to see the picture, too. So, all right, do you got some audio for Bob's and I's reaction to the Muppets?
Do you got? Yeah, I got.
Now that was a good movie.
Yeah, very much so. Now, Bob also got to see two pictures. One, the latest from Martin Scorsese. Scorsese's venture into 3D. Tell us about Hugo.
Hugo. Pleasant surprise. It wasn't what I expected it to be. And I don't want to give too much away. But if you're a film buff and really into film history, how can I put this in a nice way? You will get a Toy Story character from watching this movie.
You'll get a buzz.
Well, I was thinking of...
I know you were. I know you were.
I won't say it, but buzz
you.
Is good.
Yeah. You'll get a slinky. There, yeah. How's that? That's
okay. Yes, it is a
You'll get a Bo Peep. There.
It is a very good movie. Scorsese's use of 3D is restrained, but it's effective, and you don't get a headache. Now, I can't speak for Matthew, but for myself, mostly every 3D movie this year that has been, the 3D has been added, I've come out of the movie with my head pounding. And I'm glad that I usually have a designated driver with me because I would have been dead and not been able to sit here.
There was one film that I saw in 3D that mattered this year. No, I have not seen Hugo yet, but it's Werner Herzog's Cave of Forgotten Dreams. And that is one where it is scope and atmosphere as opposed to gotcha gimmicks, or we'll just throw it on top of a film that was already made.
Right, but he's a good director, and plus that's a documentary.
Yes. So. How many 3D documentaries have you seen?
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah,
because exactly. There weren't any until earlier this year.
Exactly.
So, okay, and a lot of the things I've been reading about Hugo is that it's kind of a Valentine to Scorsese as a kid.
Yes, it's sort of Scorsese. This is like Scorsese's love letter to movies, to the history of film, to his recollection of films as a child. It's a story about ingenuity, invention, and it's basically, without giving too much away, a 2-hour plug for film preservation.
But are you hit over the head with it?
No, because it sort of builds slowly, and when you find out the big revelation, you go, "Oh my God, cool."
Okay.
Especially if you're a film buff.
Cool. All right, good. So good. That's out as well. Eventually, it'll get. I can't believe that didn't get a bigger.
I know,
opening,
but
so.
I think. I asked my editor to run the review anyway, since it's Thanksgiving weekend. They need stuff to fill the paper, so hopefully it ran in today's paper. And plug to Indianapolis, I started something new this year. If I've been reviewing movies that have opened and that I know won't come to Lafayette, a lot of the foreign films and art house independent films, I put my reviews online, www.jconline.com.
We plug all the time, so
okay.
Go ahead.
And so I try to get people from Lafayette to broaden their horizons, drive down to Indy, and see movies that have not or will not show up in Lafayette, as in Take Shelter. And
one of the best films I think I've seen this year.
This year, which hasn't come to Lafayette. I don't know if my week with Marilyn will get there. I hope Hugo gets there. If not, get your torches. We will march on the theaters.
Wow. See, I've always been used to driving an hour for movies. I grew up in Flint, Michigan, so I went to Detroit. I went to Ball State. I drive down here. My first newspaper job, of course, the office was in Attica, so I would come up to Lafayette quite often to see films that, well, there are no. There's one movie theater in Fountain County. That's about it. Yeah. And then living outside of Chicago, and now back here. So, yeah.
Yes, I'm used to driving. The only, you know.
You of all people, yes.
Yes, and I've been doing it since,
1993.
January of. I didn't start driving. What I started doing earlier was I'd review movies almost a week late because I'd see them in the Lafayette theaters. And then I don't know how I got hooked up with everybody and started getting passes and got hooked up with the screenings. But that's been at least, 18 and a half years that I've been driving back and forth.
Do you remember the first film you reviewed?
Ever?
No, for Lafayette.
Yeah, Chaplin.
Really?
Yes. And I liked the movie, and I remember I said, but the hardest thing to do is show genius. So really, the movie, even though it's a good movie and Robert Downey gave a good performance. The movie is rather superficial because the best thing about Chaplin is how he came up with his ideas, which is something you can't show on really on screen except for the one sequence where he figured out
right. The
city lights sequence. But that encapsulated his genius process.
Very good. Cool. And there's one other film that opened that you got to watch this week, and it's the latest from Alexander Payne and starring George Clooney, The Descendants.
Yes.
Now, of course, Alexander Payne, not a bad track record. Citizen Ruth, Election, About Schmidt, and Sideways.
Right.
And now this one. And it's Clooney is a harried, weary dad.
He's a real estate tycoon. Supposedly he and his family are descendants of the last queen of Hawaii. They own the subplot. There's myriad subplots, one of which they own this big parcel of land that they're going to lose in about 7 or 8 years because it's a trust. Then the family, all the cousins are getting together and got to vote on what to do with it, who to sell it to. And he's, being the real estate mogul, has to decide what to do. But that's the secondary plot. The main plot has to do with Clooney and his family. He's one of these dads, absentee dad because of his business. His wife is in a coma from a water skiing accident. He finds out that, I don't know if I should be giving too much away.
But things are revealed.
Yes, things are revealed.
And he's got to do things that he hasn't done before.
Yes, and he's got to actually learn to deal with his two daughters. One is precocious, like 10-year-old. The other's a, how can we put this? Not a typical movie teenager.
Uh-oh.
You know what that means.
Yes.
She drinks. She uses bad language. She's smarter than she's...
Her age actually
yes,
is.
Yes, her age actually is. And she speaks in movie teenage speak.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, that's okay because it's a good movie. It's very... It is. Alexander Payne knows how to peel. He has his characters are like onions. He peels.
They're smelly?
No.
They're stinky?
No. He peels layers. So what you think is really... This person being as superficial as the movie goes on, he peels, you know, more and more the person. You find out the person really is not this airhead or not this spoiled little teenage girl.
You got to put him in the oven, in the freezer, so
yes.
You won't cry when you cut him.
Yes.
Right.
But, yeah, they're very good, and Clooney has a very good scene with his wife near the end of the movie that one of the best little... vignette scene, one of the little scenes he's ever done. I really enjoyed it, and I'm thinking of putting him on the list for the best actor.
Well, some folks are saying this is a career-changing moment for him, to go from suave, sophisticated leading man to it's okay to be perfect.
Yeah, he's not perfect. He shows a vulnerable side. He shows a bit of pettiness. You know, after all, he does get... Well, we don't want to give away too much,
right.
But he does get upset over some revelations. But he's a nice guy, but he's a flawed person. You know, you root for him. You know, he's one of these people you like him. You want him to do the right thing, even when you feel that it'd be more emotionally satisfactory for him to do the wrong thing.
And the other thing I'm intrigued with the film is its depiction of Hawaii, because every film that is set in Hawaii has a tendency to turn into a travelogue piece.
Right. And the interesting thing about this is at the very beginning, there's a voiceover narration by Clooney in which he even touches on this. He says, you know, and you have like these montages of various faces and people in Hawaii, and he says, you know, this isn't paradise. We have the same problems. We have the same illnesses. We have the same foibles as people on the mainland. So, you know, we're just people. We're not all sitting around eating poi and doing the hula and at luau's all the time.
I remember seeing a hooker in downtown Honolulu.
Really?
Yeah. She didn't have a grass skirt on either.
Ah. Uh-huh.
See, so there's that. Yes, I actually, when I was 12, 13, I went with my folks to Honolulu, not for that purpose, but, you know, they're out there.
Yeah.
We don't see that. So, all right, Kobe, do we have some audio for Bob's reviews of Hugo and The Descendants?
Hugo.
Yes, 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 yes.
There you are.
Yeah, okay, cool. Get one for The Descendants? Play it again.
Yes, 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 yes,
now,
yes.
The only thing, though, about The Descendants, if you don't like Hawaiian music, you're just going to have to suck it up.
Did they play Over the Rainbow?
No.
Okay, because there was a documentary I watched, Healing, I believe, about the 9/11 victims. And you know what? If you get married on the beach, you don't have to play the Hawaiian version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Right. No,
you don't have to
Over the Rainbow, but there is a lot of it is the musical score, and there's a lot of Hawaiian singing, you know, Hawaiian song, a lot of Hawaiian music in it. So if you don't like Hawaiian music that much, you're just going to have to tolerate it.
Deal with it.
Deal with it and watch the movie.
But it's got to be better than the soundtrack from 51st States, where it was all Hawaiian versions of pop tunes from back in the day.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I like that.
A grunt of disgust from Mr. Slagle.
Actually, no, I like that movie.
I like those two. I don't need Rob Schneider rubbing his nipples and vomiting walruses and the other projectile vomiting characters. So, yeah, those two were fine. Rest of the film, not so much. Yeah. All right, let's take a break, and we'll talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
A Monday warrior, me stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, me pride.
Rush Talk Caller, you're on the line.
No, we're not doing that. That's, of course, that's a song that was used in I Love You, Man. Mm-hmm. There's a justification for playing Rush on Film Sociology. You know, you're late, but you still come up with an audio nugget. That's good. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocy. That's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Kobe Slagle hanging out. Bob Bloom, longtime critic of the Lafayette Journal and Courier, hanging out with me. Kobe, let's play the DVD intro properly, please.
Now I've got to fight.
I know, because I threw your sound pattern off.
Yeah,
But he hasn't heard it.
Here we go.
All right.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
And now the video store is open.
Thank you, Wesley.
We don't get enough Wesley Willis on the show either. All right. So new titles on DVD and Blu-ray. The biggest title, I think, of the new films and the best. And this is a film I know, as a member of the IFJA list and nominees and titles are being thrown out for end of the year consideration. For me, the best of list is kind of like Christmas music. I wait till after Thanksgiving and really once the month changes, then I start to accumulate. But this is a film that will probably make my top 10, but it's Super 8 from J.J. Abrams.
It's on my top 10 list already.
A really, for me, a much bigger surprise than I had anticipated. Steven Spielberg, executive producer, J.J. Abrams, of course, creator of Lost, and director of Mission Impossible 3.
Cloverfield.
And this is kind of a Valentine. Yes, I'm saying Valentine twice in one show. To filmmaking for kids. I mean, kids doing filmmaking. And some of the Spielbergian sci-fi fantasy of the late 70s, early 80s.
It's sort of like Spielberg and Abrams making their ultimate childhood movie together.
Right. Yeah, it's late 70s, I believe.
1979.
So yeah. You have a group of kids with the title of the movie. Making a movie, and they come across,
the greatest train wreck since The Fugitive.
Oh, I was going to say, since Heaven's Gate.
Since The Fugitive and The Greatest Show on Earth.
There you go. Oh, very good. See, this is... You don't need to see The Greatest
Show
on Earth.
Chris was saying it was better than The Fugitive.
Who said?
That's a good
question.
I think it is, yeah.
You know why? Because the problem with The Fugitive is the mountains of Illinois. Got a problem with the mountains of Illinois. But then again, Close Encounters had those mountains in Indiana.
Yeah.
And Richard Dreyfuss wearing a shirt from the Ball State University. But, there's elements of E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And a little Cloverfield.
Not a lot, but right. Just enough. And this is another film that knows its material, doesn't shy away from it, doesn't try to reinvent it. It just kind of plays it close to the heart.
The best part of the movie is not the monster or the visitor, whatever you want to call it,
right?
But it's the relationship between the kids. That, to me, is the crux of the movie.
And most of the kids, except for Miss Fanning, who is, of course, of the family,
right?
All of them know nothing about these kids. All look like they just walked off a neighborhood and slapped into a picture.
And if you watch this, I usually skim through extras because of all the DVDs, Blu-rays I get every week. But with this one, I actually sat and watched. The extras are very interesting. There's a going through the process with Joel Courtney, him getting the role. There's a very good featurette on Spielberg and Abrams with scenes from their movies and how they've been. One interesting fact.
Yes.
When Spielberg, in his younger days, wanted his Super 8 collection of movies that he had made cataloged, he hired a young teenage J.J. Abrams to do it because he had seen a Super 8 movie that J.J. Abrams had done.
Get out.
It's true.
Really?
Yes. I found that, to me, when I saw that, I said, oh, these guys should just work together forever. They're like kindred souls.
Cool. See?
That's really cool.
That is really cool.
Yes, it's rather interesting. One of the more interesting extras.
A lot of extras on
yes,
the disc?
Yes, yes.
So yeah, go check it out. It's really, really, it was the best film of of the summer.
And if you have a good sound system, crank it up during the train wreck sequence and stand back. Or sit back.
Most definitely. So yeah, let's hear Sir Ben. He's getting a workout today. Now, I did want to I forgot to mention a film that opened last week that I finally got to see, and I'll keep it fairly brief, is the latest from Lars von Trier, Melancholia. There's nothing like the end of the world to bring two sisters together, where it's half wedding gone bad and half world coming to an end. And Kirsten Dunst is excellent in it. Kiefer Sutherland's really good. John Hurt, Charlotte Rampling. I made you Google Charlotte Rampling, I believe.
I think so.
But this is a light Lars von Trier film compared to Breaking the Waves, Dancer in the Dark, Dogville, and
Antichrist,
Mandalite, and better than Antichrist. Antichrist was the first von Trier film where I just went, I don't understand what you're trying to do. But this one, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
I will see it.
Yeah, you'll see it.
I'll get the chance to see it eventually.
All right, some other new titles out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The latest remake, not the latest remake, but a revamping of Conan the Barbarian, not with Arnold. And go to the Film Fix, my friend Jeff Marker down in Georgia. He got to see it and wrote about its sheer ridiculousness. So, not geniusness, ridiculousness.
I like
ridiculous. Yeah. Also, Spy Kids, All the Time in the World, where you have pregnant Jessica Alba.
What?
Yeah, she's in it. But it's...
Oh, yeah.
Not Tommy Wiseau directing Jessica Alba. That's a whole other thing. The Devil's Double, about being Hussein...
Saddam Hussein. Uday.
Right.
Bad day for Uday.
Bad day. And Bad Day at Black Rock.
Yes.
Also, we've got to make Kobe watch that. Sarah's Key with Kirsten Scott Thomas. For you sports documentary nuts, boy, this go look for a good price on this. But it's the ESPN 30 for 30 documentary series.
Yes.
The complete series on Blu-ray. That means 30. That's a lot of money. Or you can send one to 1630 North Meridian Street. Hint, hint. So... enjoyed those big time.
Have to look for it on eBay, see if anybody gets tired of it after their first viewing, buy it used.
Right. So those are out. Now, some older titles, some Bob remembers in theater, some he doesn't. For instance, Birth of a Nation.
So I don't remember that.
You don't remember. Okay. So, you know.
Abdul was talking about that.
Yeah, Birth of a Nation. Yay, racist cinema. No, it's not. The movie's not racist, but it does... it does have a
hero.
Okay, fine. But it does have a hero who's a member of the Klan, and he's riding on a horse with a big sheet.
Yes. Or Southern Indiana. Yes. Got where he was going with the sheet over his head, but what the heck?
You know what it was? It was a horse with no name.
So. Probably.
Shut up. Shut up, Kobe.
Now you got to remember.
I'll hit you with America's Greatest Hits, which I don't. It's not as good as Red Clay. Be quiet.
Now, you got to look at Birth of a Nation in context of its time and what it brought to cinema.
That's true. From a technical standpoint.
From a technical standpoint, it is a groundbreaking film.
Story-wise,
it's a piece of racist crap.
There you go. So.
And, you know, and the man who made it was a Southerner, and, you know, his memories of the Civil War from what his parents told him were not good ones, so...
He would be a guy who waved the rebel flag in Indiana, even though we're geographically on the side that won.
Yeah.
So there's that. Now Criterion, one of our favorite labels that always get your money's worth when it comes to picture, sound quality, and extra features and essays. They got two titles that they have put out on Blu-ray. I think you can still go to a certain chain bookstore and get it for 50% off. Hint, hint. Guess what? Not Borders, but there's two titles. One is Rushmore, for many the best Wes Anderson film in many people's opinion.
Yes,
that's also the film that brought us Jason Schwartzman. Mm-hmm. He's not on your list, is he?
No.
Okay, Kobe's got a blank. Wait a minute. He's got a blank list of actors he can do without.
I don't know. I have one of those.
Do you?
Sort of. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to your list in a little bit. You guys can compare. This is good. But Schwartzman plays kind of a overachiever in social aspects, grade wise not so good student at a private school who falls for his teacher, but also played by Olivia Williams.
Williams, and
of course he's gonna fight for her hand. With an older alumni booster played by Bill Murray. This helped get Bill Murray in the dramatic, better than the films he was doing in the 90s.
Lost in Translation.
Right. Yeah. It got him down that kind of serious movie path.
Yeah.
And any film that has Seymour Cassell and Brian Cox, that's always worth checking out. So,
yes.
But, you know, very dry humor from Wes Anderson, great soundtrack, really good performances, and you'll get a lot of extra goodies with Criterion.
And then there's 12 Angry Men.
Oh.
Now, the interesting thing about this, 1957.
The film debut of Sidney Lumet. The great Sidney Lumet.
Sidney Lumet as director.
Yep.
It's not my favorite Sidney Lumet movie. But
not mine, but that's a hell of a way to start.
Yes, well, that's because he also directed it on TV.
That is true. A man who always had 2 weeks of rehearsals with his actors before going on. This is why actors love to work with him.
Right.
Henry Fonda, E.G. Marshall, Jack Klugman, John Fiedler.
Jack Warden, I believe.
Jack Warden was in that.
Who's the other guy?
Ed Begley. Senior. Senior. Yes.
And his bunch son drove him in his car. No.
But I made you watch that, didn't I?
12 Angry Men.
Great film. Just rock solid. If you'd have said in 19, and I'm sure this caused a lot of headaches in 1957, that you're going to make a movie pretty much set in one room.
Yep.
and it doesn't move anywhere. But man, Lumet with his Lumet as a filmmaker and his camera work on top of great performances by everybody.
Very solid movie. They did a Russian remake a couple years ago.
Really?
Called 12, which is came out on DVD. I don't think it was played in the theaters here, but it came out on DVD from one of those. I don't even remember what company it was. But it's basically a remake. I think the victim, the kid on trial this time is on trial for some terrorist act, something like that. But it hewed pretty close, you know, in spirit to the original, but it gave it that, you know, frosty Russian
vibe to it.
Yes, vibe. Thank you. I can't think of the right word.
Yes. And I also remember there was a remake that was done for cable, which is a, you can't compare it to Sidney Lumet's version.
No.
But also had a pretty solid cast with George C. Scott, Jack Lemmon.
Yes.
Edward James Olmos, Ozzie Davis, Hume Cronin, Tony Danza was actually good in that, William Peterson, Mackay Williamson. It was directed by William Friedkin. For HBO, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And, you know, not bad compared to, but if you put them one next to the other,
One thing about the original that may disturb some people, and this may sound...
What, you mean it was an all-white jury?
Yeah. That, you know, here it's in New York and
in the 50s.
And it's an all white jury. Now, on TV, and you could see that because, you know, they had sponsors, they had to broadcast it in the South. And I guess you could see it for the movie too, because they wanted to get, you know, Southern audiences. And, you know, I could see some, you know, I don't want to mention any state below the Mason-Dixon line saying, oh, we don't want to book this movie that has some black guy on the jury judging some. The kid was Puerto Rican, I believe.
Right, so.
But still.
Can't have black on brown crime.
Right, no. Could I make a plug for another Criterion that just
Please do.
Now, this is really going to float your boats. It's one of the latest Eclipse series, the Sabu trilogy.
Ooh.
Drums, Elephant Boy, and Jungle Book. And there's no singing in Jungle Book.
There's no bare necessities?
No bare necessities. This is Sabu is a name that not many people today remember.
I kind of remember.
He was a child actor. He was from India. Elephant Boy, Drum, they were his first two movies. His best movie is the 1940 version, Thief of Baghdad, which is also out on Criterion, which has one of the most... If you ever like to watch a movie, just to listen to the score, Miklos Rose's score for Thief of Baghdad is a movie to listen to beside watch.
Cool.
So that is also out from Criterion. And it's well worth it because it's fun to see the first two of these, you know, British stiff upper lip colonial movies. So the political correctness is not.
I was saying, how's the African casting in these pictures?
Yeah, they're set in India. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. How are the Indian castings in this
picture? Well, of course,
picture,
you know, but they are.
Let me guess. White actors with a lot of brown makeup.
Probably, yes. But, you know, I hate to say this. I'm not a big fan of political correctness in movies, especially period films.
Right.
I don't know if you remember when they redid Four Feathers a few years ago with our late friend
Heath Ledger. Kate Hudson and Wes Bentley. Yes,
and,
I do remember
and they
that.
Had
Jemaine Hunsu, yes.
Who was nowhere even in the original. And that was, we have to put a black actor in there now.
Well, The Onion had the headline Jemaine Hunsu to play every African in every movie.
Yeah, so... I object to things like that. You know, let's be true to the period.
And I believe Criterion put out the 30s version of the Four Feathers recently.
So. Yes, they did, which is another lovely. It's a beautiful movie. The color was done by the Cordas, and their color movies, the Technicolor is just lovely.
Leslie Howard?
No. Was Ralph Richardson.
Ralph Richardson, right.
He is the sub. It's John Justin is.
Okay.
I think is the hero. Ralph Richardson's the secondary noble hero who gives up the girl when.
Tough.
Yeah.
Tough.
Goes blind in the sun of Sudan.
Yes. Don't get blinded by the sun or blinded by the light.
Yes.
Or have a duel in the sun.
Yes, that's true.
You just keep rolling with these.
Rolling down the river.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Can't catch up, can you?
No, I can't.
can't. Speaking of, yes. I don't know if it's a new release on Blu-ray, but as I was doing some shopping today, came across on Blu-ray Jackie Brown.
Really?
Yes. It came out a few weeks ago. That and Reservoir Dogs.
And Pulp Fiction, I
and
believe.
And Pulp Fiction.
Now, that's a question where because I don't know if I want to buy that again. I love Jackie Brown. It's my favorite Tarantino film because Tarantino loves Elmore Leonard, and it shows. And by the way, we need to put the interviews that we've done here on Film Sociology. We got to put those online because one of them is with Elmore Leonard. Mm-hmm. That might make the end of the year show. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But anyway, he was one of the best adaptations of Elmore Leonard. The thing is, I'm wondering if it's you know, got any new features on it compared to the DVD.
I don't know because they were putting them out. Can I name the studio or is that?
No, you can name it. They're going to know.
Lionsgate. Yeah. And I think they were just putting them out. And I don't remember if they were putting on any new features, but I think they were doing them like a little cheaper than the normal Blu-ray price.
Right. So I'm curious.
I have it at home and I don't remember. Sorry.
Okay. Well, no, you check on that next. I'm still waiting because I know Kill Bill I don't remember if that's been put out on Blu-ray, and two, I haven't bought it yet.
No,
I
don't think they ever put it out like combined.
There was always a report that it was going to be that.
Yeah.
Like the Godfather saga, but so I'm still we're waiting.
Yes.
Nope. Not going anywhere.
One of my, I'm waiting for the Kill Bill is one collection, and I'm waiting for. Do you remember the what you were talking about, the Godfather saga, the NBC version where they put it in chronological order
with the extra scenes?
Yes, that's what I'm hoping. Paramount eventually puts that out on either DVD or Blu-ray, and not the TV version where James Caan's language is cleaned up. But
no, we don't need that. We don't need it. But you. Speaking of, I love in The Godfather. The Godfather has one of the biggest snafus in cinema, but you don't care because it's so great. And it's James Caan's phantom punch when he's beating up Talia Shire's husband. I mean, he misses him by a good 2 feet, but it's still a scary, effective scene of Sonny just kicking the daylights out of this guy.
This poor Carlo. He deserved it.
Of course he deserved it. Of course. But it was kind of like, and I was reminded because Mrs. Soucy especially points out actors who obviously cannot play music. But, you know, let's not forget Sam's fantastic piano playing in Casablanca.
Yeah.
So little tiny things like that. Just point out.
People, you know, Cornell Wilde is Franz Liszt and a Songtree member. You know, he's not really... People do that all the time.
And then there's Roger Daltrey as Franz Liszt in Listomania, which Warner Brothers needs to put out in their burn a CD
Warner
Archive. Yeah, that's just a bizarre, strange film, which I will make you watch someday,
yes,
Mr. Slagle.
Actually, I'm very proud of that series right now. They're starting to put out my type of movies. They started putting out a set of Monogram B Westerns.
Really?
They just finished a third set of Tim Holt RKO B Westerns.
I did see that.
And now they're putting out, actually, it was supposedly available on this past Tuesday, the first set of Monogram B Westerns.
Nice.
With Johnny Mack Brown and other great Western actors from the 30s and 40s.
Now, when did you get? How did you first get hooked onto those?
Onto B Westerns?
Yeah.
Probably when I went to my first nostalgia convention, it was 1976 in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Met a bunch of the actors who were still alive and just fell in love. I've always been in love with old movie serials. And from there, it's just one step to the right or to the left. And you're into Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and Hopalong Cassidy and Johnny Mack Brown. And they're simple, you know. You put your mind on idle. You sit there for 60 minutes, watch good persevere over evil. You know who the good guy is. You know who the bad guy is. And people get shot and they don't bleed.
Thanks, Sam Peckinpah. Or Sergio. No, Leone was the big deal. I think he was the first one in which shooter and shootee were in the same frame.
Yeah.
Because you were not allowed to do that.
No.
If you watch a lot of Westerns, like the ones Bob mentioned, you get a shot of the person shooting, and then they cut to, you got me. You did in the front yard.
Yeah, that was part of the code back then.
Right.
You couldn't show the bullet leaving the gun and hitting the guy in the same scene. Just like you couldn't show somebody hitting somebody over the head with something. You had to, like, cut, and you'd see, you know, a guy raise his arm, go like this, and then mm-hmm. the next scene you'd see the guy getting hit on the head, but you wouldn't see it in the same. There'd be a cut in between.
Right.
Weird things in the movies back then. People slept in separate beds and still had kids.
Trying to figure out how that happened. You know what? Which bed did they decide?
I don't know.
It's a weird thing. Rob? Laura? Mike, Carol, which one gets to do the deed? Which bed gets the honor? Do you alternate?
Could be.
Let's create Bobby on this one and Cindy on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. You hadn't thought about that before, have you, sir?
Mm-mm.
No, that's why you were here.
That's why I'm here.
You get nostalgic information.
Get an education.
You do get an education, sir. Now we got. Yeah, you know what. Play your intro because I'll explain to Bob. Well, Bob knows. We'll know what this means in just a moment.
Here we go.
All right.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe Watching?
Now, Bob, this is a regular segment. Our engineer and producer, Kobe Slagle,
How old is Kobe? 20, 19, 18?
You're 23.
23 will be 24 in a couple weeks.
Okay, so I know you do. I know I do. I have concert T-shirts older than him.
Yeah.
But anyway, every week or so I give him new movies or old movies to watch, and he will come and report back to me, because early in our collaboration here on Film Sociology, I'd bring up titles and I get a blank wall. So we're gonna, educate the man.
I'm doing that with a couple of my younger coworkers.
Very good. Very good. Well, and now it's become known as the fight for Kobe Cinematic Soul between myself and his girlfriend, aka Fair Sweet Bianca, who's been showing you musicals and Shirley Temple movies lately. So to give her credit, she did make him watch Meet Me in St. Louis.
Just got that on Blu-ray. I'm just dying to break into that.
Which we cannot say no. Bianca's reaction. We'll tell you later, Bob. But and you're still since my fantasy team beat your fantasy football mm-hmm. team, you will be watching a Hitchcock film. I haven't found it yet. I haven't picked it yet. Because everything in my new house is about just opening up boxes and putting stuff on the shelves.
Which Hitchcock film are you planning on giving?
Well, I don't know yet. I have to.
Last year it was Psycho.
Ah, give him a British one, Young and Innocent.
No, Frenzy.
No, I'm not.
We'll see. It really depends on which box I open and get up on the shelves. But anyway, I gave him two films that, and you have three actually. There's two classics. And I gave him the remake of Bedazzled because that film should have won an Oscar for best costuming. Thank you, Elizabeth Hurley. She didn't design the costumes, but she wears them. But I also gave you Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yes, and On the Waterfront.
Yeah. So now that Bob, who is a film historian buff, and he's on this side, we're not going to bully you to get going and watching those movies. Will you please?
Especially
Will you get on
Bridge
it?
Bridge on the River Kwai.
Yeah.
Especially that?
Oh, yes.
Why?
Why? Because it has.
Because it's awesome.
Nope, it has one of the greatest performances in cinema history in Alec Guinness.
Sir Alec Guinness
Sir
to
Alec
you.
Guinness, before he became Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Way before. Or became an Indian in Passage to India. Speaking of Sabu.
Yes. And it's a very wonderful performance of a man who lets his obsessions get the best of him, and he just fails to see the big picture.
And Fair Sweet Bianca will like to look at shirtless William Holden. In the 50s,
yes,
she would. I'm just saying. So there's a little something for both of you.
Okay.
Now, of course, on the waterfront, Brando wins an Oscar.
Yeah.
You got the famous scene with Rod Steiger, and if you could have been a contender. You got Lee J. Cobb, who you don't want to mess with.
No.
And you can also look at Eva Marie Saint. So, and Carl Malden won an Oscar. One of two.
No, he didn't win the Oscar
for
that.
No,
he
didn't.
Won it for... Streetcar.
Sorry. But he worked with Kazan twice.
Right, yes.
So So yeah, you gotta get going on those.
Yeah, I know.
And now Bob says you gotta get going on it. So there's that.
But watch Bridge on the River Kwai first. it's color. The other one's black and white.
Oh gosh.
That's
easier for him to transition into.
Yeah. As my daughter used to tell me when she'd see me watching a movie, she'd say, "Are you watching one of those old fart black and white movies again?"
Wow. Manhattan? No. Coppola's last film. Tetro was in black and white.
I believe so.
So
yeah.
We'll have to get on that. But and also, this will be, I think, your introduction to David Lean, Sir David Lean. Because you haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia.
No.
You haven't seen Dr.
There
Zhivago.
Are no words to that song.
Yeah, I know. There are no words to that song. Yes, our favorite scene. Do you remember the Hollywood Nights?
Yes.
There's the big argument because one guy thinks there's lyrics to the theme from Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, no. So, no, no, there were not. You know who did the music for Lawrence of Arabia? I know this because I just picked up, well, I knew it before buying the CD, but I came across at Half Price Books in the dollar bin a compilation of film music by Maurice Jarre.
Right, that's right. So, because she also did Zhivago.
Zhivago, Ryan's daughter.
Sorry, I'm thinking of Zhivago.
Nodding off. Bob Bloom was nodding off to Dr. Zhivago.
I'm sorry.
Even though it has Julie Christie in it.
Yes, it has Julie Christie in it, and it also has that great Russian actor, Omar Sharif.
Oh, well, let's not. We're going to get into all of those fine, you know, actors. Well, Rod Steiger, you know,
yes,
he's our favorite Russian actor.
Yes.
And
Tom Courtney, but he's British, so that's close enough.
Oh, and Geraldine Chaplin. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, all those English actors playing non-English roles. Yeah. So, well, you know, I think we'll get to this next week, but in The Onion, they had the list of best scenes in worst movies. And, a couple of the writers suggested, like, the lightsaber fight in episode one is an example. Somebody wrote
This is best scenes in worst movies?
Best scenes in worst movies. The vomiting scene in Poltergeist 2, Hugh Grant's video and music and lyrics. But one of the things that came up was at the bottom by some of the reader comments. One was James Woods in The Specialist, and I wrote Rod Steiger in The Specialist because he plays a Cuban drug lord and says Jew more than the entire cast of Schindler's List.
Exactly.
So someone else wrote Sam Jackson getting eaten by a shark in Deep Blue Sea. Gene Hackman shooting Keith David in The Quick and the Dead. You know, things like that. So anyway, think about that for next week. Your favorite moments from bad movies, and of course everyone's favorite Hawkman from Flash Gordon.
Yes,
great in that. So all right, Kobe, words to live by.
Silent breed is people.
Zardoz has spoken.
That's right, we give people moments from Soylent Green and Zardoz here at Film Sociology. Bob Bloom, thank you for coming.
Oh, my pleasure.
We'll hope to have you in soon.
Well, maybe if I ever get another Friday off,
well, call us as soon as you get one.
Okay, will do.
All right, on behalf of Kobe Slagle and Bob Bloom, I'm Matthew Sosie. Go see a good movie. You deserve it.